ask our next presenters to come up. This is another promising practice session. This is 21st century literacy instruction for the blind, integrating technology into Braille instruction. This is not the famous duo of Strunk and White, but this is the famous duo of Strunk and Warden. When we started talking and asking around, and we learned about what Sharon was doing with ELL, we also learned about some interesting and innovative things that were happening at Blind Incorporated related to Braille and technology integration. So we have two communication instructors from Blind Incorporated. Ryan Strunk is originally from Nebraska, and he was trained actually to as a music educator. He was taught Braille in the public schools in Nebraska. Some people probably know his teacher, one of the folks that has worked closely with some of our programs and is noted for her work in Braille. He does hold a national certification in literary Braille, and he has taught Braille in places like Hawaii and decided to go to Minnesota. So he apparently likes the colder weather. And he's been involved with many programs dealing with people and teaching Braille and technology. Emily similarly has a diverse background. Every panel doesn't have a graduate of Drake, but at least the first two do. She has worked at Blind Incorporated for 14 years in a variety of capacities. She started out teaching travel, and has really worked to bring the structured discovery methodology to her work with Braille and technology. So here for a presentation on incorporating technology into Braille instruction are Ryan Strunk and Emily Ward.
Well, I want to thank there's a whole bunch of them over here.
I want to thank Mark for the introduction, though. He took away probably about 30 minutes of my speech. So, but no, it is it's great to be here. Thank you guys very much for having us and inviting us to speak. We want to give you, before we get started here, just a little about where we came from and sort of why we put this together. And as Mark said, I was very fortunate to have an incredible teacher growing up. She started teaching me Braille at the age of 4, started having me work on slate and stylus and sleep shade training at the age of 5, and I was as rebellious as you can imagine. Most children are, but it was very important at a young age that I was introduced to those literacy skills and to those blindness skills and had the opportunity to pick stuff up like that. So it was important for me then when I got to Hawaii and then to Blind Incorporated and all the other things that I've done to make sure that other people can have those same sorts of opportunities.
Who was the secret teacher?
Oh, Kim Adams.
Thank you.
I didn't know she was secret.
Well, just mentioned twice without her name. She just didn't have a name.
She doesn't.
We wondered if you had another one other than the one you put in the monitor.
Well, Ryan and I are really
a
tale of two Braille educations. Mine being the lack thereof. I grew up with 22/200 vision and was taught to read print and nothing else, which was woefully insufficient for everything I wanted to do in life, particularly having an English major in college. If anybody's ever tried to read Beowulf on a CCTV, some tough sledding there. And so really that's what, when I learned, I found out that I had to learn Braille when I was in college because I was a poet and I was asked to, I had a poem published in the campus literary magazine, I was asked to give a reading at a coffee shop, and they're so darn dimly lit. And I was standing there with my 16-point font paper in front of my face and the light is not, and I forget my line, and my friends are scrambling to go turn on the lights for me. It's this fiasco, and I'm like, there has to be a better way to live my life. And so then I learned Braille as an adult. And a lot of what I learned about learning Braille as an adult, it informed me when I wanted to become, or when I happened to become the Braille teacher at Blind Incorporated back in 2009. I have been working in a variety of positions. My tendency is to go into a department, and I really kind of, my real big passion is curriculum development. And so I go into a particular job and work on how can I, you know, improve the curriculum here, what new methodology can we come up with, and what can we try. And in 2009, the opportunity came up to go into our Braille department. And so I've, ever since learning Braille as an adult, I've been absolutely passionate about it. And I'm sorry, I probably have the same problem that Natalie was talking about last night. I get passionate and I start talking really fast. So I'm going to apologize that for in advance, and also the coffee's probably not helping anything. But I wanted to take what I had learned as an adult Braille learner and apply it to coming up with some new methodologies. The main problem that we were having at Blind Incorporated in 2009, just to back up a little bit, we work primarily with adults who do have summer programs, but we work with adults like myself who, you know, were never, or who grew up blind, but were not taught the blindness skills, and those who became blind later in life. And kind of almost an even mix of those, which is kind of sad because there shouldn't be as many like me as that we have. The main problem that we were coming into or having at the time was we had a really rotten Braille-itude going on. People were finding Braille to be more of a punishment, and Ryan's going to talk more about how we dealt with this in his next section. But I wanted to think, you know, and I thought this is ridiculous. Braille is fun, and more than Braille is fun, Braille is useful. Braille is extremely, extremely useful. And I'm thinking, you know, okay, how are we talking about Braille? How are we thinking Braille? And it, what, you know, finally it all boils down to, and kind of what the main philosophy behind our teaching methodology and what we're working on discovering here is that Braille is a tool, but it is a Swiss Army knife and not a sledgehammer. And it has multiple uses. You have the corkscrew, which is to open your wine bottle, which is to read your books and enjoy, you know, the reading for pleasure. But you also have the little scissors where you're working on, you know, creating labels and organizing your home and your life. And there's the little, I'm going to stretch this metaphor way too far. There's the fingernail file where you are writing down, keeping an address book and phone numbers. And there's the some other random tool where you're, you know, playing games and you're, you know, interacting socially and things like that. There's a thousand different ways that all of us use Braille in our daily lives that is just extremely useful and integral. And I wanted to find a way that we can really get our students to see that and live it. So now I'm going to hand the mic over to Ryan. He's going to talk more about that.
Absolutely. It's an interesting thing when you come into Braille, as Emily was talking about, the Braille-itude is just crucial. That's our portmanteau for the day. If you take nothing away from the speech, let it be Braille-itude. You know, people come in and they look at this and they say, Braille is hard, Braille is difficult. And I remember experiencing this in various places that I've worked. People come in, oh, I'm never going to use this, I'm not going to use this.
Yeah.
And what we decided to do was let's figure out why Braille is hard. Why do people view Braille as this punishment? And one of the things that codified that for me was in learning Braille, I found through my experience that there are two problems that people encounter when they learn Braille. The first of these is, what the heck am I feeling? And the second is, and what the heck does what I'm feeling stand for? And so you'll get these people, and they'll come in, and they'll start to, they'll put their hands on some Braille, and they'll feel it, and they'll go, okay, dots 1, 3, 4, 5, and you say, yes, that's fantastic, absolutely, and they have this little glow of pride, and everybody's really excited, and then you say, okay, what does that stand for? I don't know. And suddenly, this success turns into an instant failure. And so what we wanted to do was we wanted to find ways to personalize the curriculum and to create successes for people. And I think the system that has been put together here really does that by spreading out some of the difficulties, by spreading out some of the stresses of the program. So what we do first is we do rote teaching, which is kind of a crazy way to think about Braille. But as Sharon mentioned just a moment ago, that people are hardwired to be oral learners. And so one of the first things we do with people is we sit down. I don't know if you ever heard of a peg slate before, but they are a big frame, maybe almost a foot wide, and they have 10 cells on them, and the cells are about an inch tall. And so we give people, we say, you know, here are the dot configurations, and then when we start teaching them Braille, we teach them on peg slates. So we show them these gigantic letters, and we talk to them about memorization. And so the first alphabet they learn is an inch tall. And then when we get to things like but, can, do, every, from, go, have, we teach them all orally. And so it's really important to, again, create these successes, give people areas in which they can excel and feel like they're having the successes, and then we can add in some of the harder stuff when they get to a point where they feel like, oh, Braille's not so bad after all. I've memorized this many symbols. Okay, let's tackle this next step. And I think the other part as you're doing that is to personalize your curriculum to the people that you're teaching. So, for example, I have a student right now who played for Tulane University, played basketball for them, and then went from Tulane to the New York Knicks for a while. And so as soon as we started getting to the CHGHSH and the EDER, he started getting words from me like player and shootout and baller and all sorts of things, so that as he's reading and as he's having these successes, he's also having the, hey, this relates to me, this is interesting to me. If I have a student who's a hippie, I'm going to teach them words like shower. And sorry, I. But you know, flower. Yes, flower. Thank you. It's really important to relate to the people that you're teaching. Create these successes. Create these personal connections. And when you do that, then you have people feeling more excited about Braille. So Emily's going to talk to you a little bit about the exact procedure that we use here. I'm going to pass the mic back over to her.
Alrighty. I'm going to. I have a what I like to call my non-visual aid here. It is a copy of the. When I first started teaching Braille, I started out by creating a set of worksheets that went along with a Sharon's McDuffie reader. And then I realized from there, from what we were going to do in terms of structuring the class, that I wanted to group things a little bit differently. So I ended up writing a new textbook. And I borrowed or stole Sharon's list of 1,000 most common words in the English language. And then I cut them up based on the order they would appear with whatever signs they contain. And so this textbook, I like to call it Codemaster. I'm assuming that's the name. It's copyrights pending, and I'm assuming that's what I'm going to copyright it under. And it's based off that using those 1,000 most common words in the English language. When we wanted to design the textbook, there was a couple things in it. I'll just kind of talk about them because they kind of give you a sense of some of the things that we're going after in this. I wanted it to be in a binder, in a three-ring binder, because I want people to be able to take pages out and put them back in, and because the biggest thing about Braille starting out for people is they don't, if it's big, they're not going to take it with them. And I want somebody sitting in the doctor's office, I want them to have Braille. I want them to have Braille on the bus. I want them to, nobody can tell me they don't have time to read Braille. They can take their Braille with them. So that was one thing about it, and we wanted it to be modular in that sense. In the front cover here, we also have a diagram of it's raised print letters alongside the Braille letters. We actually started out using this with our senior program, and they loved it. And I'm like, you know, well, seniors should know who the ones to get it. And we can just produce that on our Tiger embosser and just make those kind of charts. I'm sure you can buy them commercially elsewhere. But we started out, and the way I wanted to structure the code learning process is I want first page is the first 10 letters. And I want people to learn the first 10 letters the first day. And almost everybody can. There's some folks that'll come out knowing only the first 5 letters the first day. But everybody else can know the first 10 letters the first day. They walk out of the classroom and I can say to them, you know the basis for the entire Braille code now. Because you're just repeating those same 10 letters over and over again. So you've got the foundation here the first day, bam, you know it. And they smile and they're happy about that. And so then we work through the alphabet. We're integrating the alphabet signs as we go and talking about them, because you always have those last few minutes of class to review orally, if nothing else, because there's always a little, you know, time there. And within the first or the second day, they're also learning to type on a Perkins Braille or Braille note. Because we want people to have that reinforcement of writing right away. We moved the learning of the slate back because what was working for Sharon, I thought could work just as well for non-English or for regular English speakers, in that having that instant feedback of what you were writing. Also, because a certain percentage of people are going to flip out when you hand them the slate for the first time. What do you mean I'm writing backwards? Which is easy enough to overcome, as y'all know, but, you know, let's just not have that flip out on the first day. Let's have 2 weeks of success and then have that flip out. So we go through the alphabet first, and generally that takes about 2 weeks. Some people will be 1 week or faster to just learn the entire alphabet and the numbers and the basic punctuation. And then we start immediately in on a set of 36 short forms. People love short forms. They're so much easier to remember than most of the other signs. And so we'll have a group of them, you know, go over a bunch of those at one time and say, hey, look, you just learned 36 in one sitting. Isn't that awesome? And they're like, yeah. And so then when we get into stuff that's more difficult to grasp, like your 4, 6, 5, 6.6s, then those are going to be much smaller lessons on the page. And so then we're just working our way through the code, using the 1,000 most common words in the English language until they get, you know, to the end of the code, which is usually around 6 weeks with our the way we're doing things. We're working primarily, when Ryan was talking about the peg slates, initially when we start working on contracted Braille, we're going to start the process of shrinking it down, working with Braille displays, primarily first, and this is going to, you know, vary so much based on the student and where they're at. I had a student who came in the second day of class and said, can I have a slate? Because I was at the apartment, I was in so-and-so's apartment last night, and they showed me how to use the slate, and so I want one. I'm like, okay. I'm not paying them for doing that, but I am going to give you your slate. You know, so it's always going to vary versus, you know, about what, you know, the particular person you got there, but generally, yeah, so they, at that point, then we read on the Braille display, getting people more confidence in their ability to, you know, shrink it down to recognize it. You know, it's smaller, but you can read it, you know. And then we start working more and more on paper. And just gradually getting them onto double-spaced Braille and eventually down into single-spaced Braille. But the last page of the book ends up being single-spaced. But just, you know, curving it down, curving the Braille smaller and smaller and more common. And now everybody has the copy of the textbook that they can read along at home with, because in addition to the book in the pocket comes 2 CDs. There is 1 CD with my voice, which is too bad, but where the student hears each of the dot positions read. A dot one, B dots one and two, C dots one, four. I could go on. And that is going to give them orally all the dot positions that they can work on memorizing at home. And in addition, we have another CD with Ryan's much more melodic voice reading the entire textbook on that CD, so that if a, you know how a student will go home and they'll be wanting to read, and that you get this great motivated students and they're wanting to read at home, and they get to something and they don't recognize it and they're stuck and they're like, you know, and nobody else is around and they've used up all their phone friends, I guess. So, but they can just pop in that CD and see, you know, oh, okay. And then they, you know, they can read along with it. They can do, there's a lot of different ways that they can utilize that tool to their best advantage. Our second section of the textbook then has what we like to call the touch pages, where we've got a line of A's and one's not an A, a line of B's and one's not a B, and a lot of different pages like that that are more kind of like, what we like to call them is the low brain review pages. I said, you know, you come home, you're getting tired this first month of training, go home and sit with your touch pages and work on tracking, work on those, developing your sense of touch there. Also having them, you know, giving them that they can do outside of class independently maximizes our class time in class, that I can be teaching them new things and reinforcing what they've already learned. And then we got a final section of the textbook, because I was, this is the kind of nerd I am too, where we've got a whole section of charts, different ways, a forward lookup and a back lookup for all the different braille signs and contractions. And then a set of actual like charts with that I made on Excel and produced on the Tiger for the drop signs and for the dot 5, 4, 5, 4, 5, 6 signs, and et cetera, laid out in horizontal charts, because I just, for, you know, visual learners and just really geeky people like myself, who really kind of find those. And that came from an idea. I ended up making myself one on a Perkins Brailler when I was a student, and I'm like, gosh, it'd be nice to just hand that out, you know? So that's a lot of what, and kind of the nuts and bolts of how things are, you know, proceeding as far as Braille instruction goes in our communications class. So I'm going to hand it back over to Ryan here.
One of the interesting things that, that as Emily mentioned before, is really beginning that incorporation of technology at an early level. And as we hand those CDs to people, we say, here we're working on a lot of rote memorization, and for a little while we're going to be working on the peg slates, but here is everything you need to read Braille, and here is the CD that will help you do it. I feel this total pressure to be melodic now that Emily has said that. So it's important for people to realize. No, line one. But so we want to create these instances where people can, from the very beginning, incorporate technology, because it's an interesting thing. We talk about how we were afraid that technology would be the death of Braille. And in many ways, technology is making it easier and easier to facilitate the learning of Braille. So I can sit at home with a mic and a sound recorder, and I can record the entire contents of the book and then say to people, okay, take this home, follow along with it. And it creates this instance where, okay, somebody gets lost and they can go back and listen and they'll know, this is exactly what you're supposed to be feeling. This is exactly what you're supposed to be reading, and be able to follow along with that. We have them available in MP3. We're using APH's Book Wizard Producer to put them in DAISY, that people can listen to them on their streams or on their NLS players. But giving people that instant access to the book, even when they can't read a dot of Braille yet. After we finish with that, we really get into the incorporation of technology. Emily talked about the Braille display. And one of the things that I love about the Braille display, whether you're using a Braille note and having them write, or whether you have a Braille display attached to a computer and you're having them read things that you type, goes back to what I mentioned earlier about incorporating people's personal hobbies and beliefs and habits into the things that they read. It's very easy for you to type something up on the computer and give it to them on the Braille display. And we split as often as we can the Braille between paper and the display. Now, I am a firm believer that you can read faster on paper than you can on the display. But I'm also a firm believer in, more often than not, you will carry a display with you in the places that you go. If you break out one of those 11 and 11 and a half sheets of paper and you have it bound in a book, so that you have a book that's almost 2 feet wide, and you try to take that on an airplane, your fellow passengers might not appreciate you quite so much. So those are the type of people who are going to be carrying around note takers, who are going to be carrying around the Braille Edge, their little refresh of Braille displays. And that, I think, is just as useful in the 21st century as anything that we've ever done. The other thing that we do after we finish with the Braille code is the communications program at Blind Incorporated is both Braille and computer. We teach both pieces in the exact same class. So rather than having 50 minutes of Braille and 50 minutes of computer and splitting halfway through the period, is we teach the whole thing. And it's beautiful because you have these people, some of you guys have seen this, where you're having this fabulous Braille day and you're like, wow, this is amazing, and then class is over. And so we can say, okay, let's just keep reading for a little while. We'll do some extra computer tomorrow. And again, create these successes, reward the times when people are really enjoying Braille and really working with it. The next part of that is, as Emily said, Braille is useful. And we really want to get this across to people because it goes back to that Braille-itude. People feel successful when they know that this has a purpose beyond reading novels. Because not everybody that we graduate is going to be a novel reader. We understand that. And that's okay. But we want everybody who graduates to be able to read a novel, and they should be able to read the novel that they want to read. So we get people, when they get finished with Braille, articles, books, pieces of information that they're interested in. You want to read sports scores? Let's read sports scores. You want to read about Attila the Hun? Let's read about Attila the Hun. Whatever you want to read is what you get to read. And people, again, they're invested in this. It's something that they're excited about. I talked about my basketball player earlier. One of the first things I did for him was I made up a list of all the NBA teams. And then I made 6 envelopes, one for the Eastern Conference and one for the Western Conference, and mix those all up. Had the 6 envelopes off to one side, had a whole pile of teams, and I said, okay, just sort these. And here's a guy who wouldn't do homework because NCAA was on, wouldn't do homework because the Final Four was on, wouldn't do homework because it was the NBA championship, because it was the Olympics. But as soon as I gave him this basketball thing, he's like, ah, I'm going to do this while I'm watching TV. You know? And more power to you. And a student who's really into fantasy books. Okay, let's read a fantasy book. And she went from, when she started the program, she read a little bit of Braille, but she says, I have dyslexia, I can't understand a thing I read, and a month later, it's a good book, it's an interesting book, and she's already knocked out 150 pages. And we're talking about somebody who came to the program reading maybe 40 words a minute. So if they're invested in this, if they like it, they're going to read it. Braille is useful. Braille is something that you enjoy. And so the next thing that we incorporate then is projects. Everybody who comes through our program has to do 3 small projects and 1 large project. And they have to be incorporating Braille into places in their life that are going to be useful. Again, with the technology, because we teach both Braille and computer, it can either be a strictly Braille project, or it can be a Braille and computer project. It's not allowed to be just a computer project. And so people will come in, and they'll do a project, say, with regard to the computer. Somebody say, I'm having real problem memorizing these Mac commands. Okay, make a set of Braille flashcards about your Mac commands. That is one of your projects. Or they'll say, I found all these great recipes on the internet. Okay, let's Braille out those recipes on the internet, on the Slate and Stylus, of course. And have the opportunity to do these things that are of interest, but also these things that are going to be useful to them. So I think that pretty much covers most of what we have here. And I want to open the floor to if people have questions about the methodology, about incorporating technology, and see what kinds of questions you have for us, but also what we can borrow from you in terms of, as was said, sharing these ideas and making better overall Braille instruction for everyone.
Eddie Bell.
Yeah, Dr. Bell.
Actually, I have one question and a comment. Question first, anecdotally, would you say, since you started this new program, would you say that probably the data would support that students are learning faster or more efficiently than previously?
Definitely. You say the word data and I cringe a little bit. But the English major in me just doesn't do that. But But yeah, we've had a lot of success. I mean, just we've got a lot of a great amount of anecdotal success, and my boss is really getting on my back about starting to collect data because we really should back it up. We'll be calling you.
My comment for you is this. I actually wasn't supposed to talk about this till tomorrow afternoon, but I haven't been able to stop thinking about it for the last 40 minutes. National Braille Press has a Touch of Genius, I believe Braille Touch of Genius prize that they give out every year. It's a $20,000 prize, and the prize is for new innovations in tactile literacy. It could be technology, or it can be new methods of teaching, things like that. This sounds perfect to me for that. That deadline for this year is November 2nd, so it's a pretty quick turnaround, but I can talk with you more about that, and I do have some information on it. But this, because of, not that it's just a new way of cutting up Braille and teaching Braille, but the rationale and the logic behind it, to me, looks very, very innovative, and I think it's certainly worthy of consideration.
Oh, awesome. We'll definitely be talking to you about that.
I think one of the other things that is really important about what this is and what we do is that, as we said earlier, Braille-itude is the most important thing that you can instill in students. If they feel invested, they're going to be interested in it. And so we have found that more than technique, which is important, more than symbols, which are important, you have to have people liking what they're doing and interested in what they're doing. And this system, I think, really accomplishes that by making sure that people like Braille.
And really, confidence leads to competence. Because people, they feel confident that they can do these things with Braille, and they believe it, and they do it, and then they have these really, really basic self-organization skills that they need to be really successful on a job, to be that really good, efficient employee.
That's Tara over here.
I want your book. When's it coming out? Is it coming out? That is the cool. I just love it. That is so awesome.
I'm just about a month ago got a version that I'm feeling comfortable copywriting. The thing about writing a textbook is there's so much proofreading and reproofreading and rewriting involved, and I feel like we've beta tested. I'm on version 7.0 at this point, so I feel like I'm at a point where I'm willing to copyright it now and produce it. So I'm gonna sit down with my boss and figure out what we're gonna do as far as production and distribution and that. But I'm hoping to have a plan for that by the end of the year.
The Salt Lake Center for the Blind is very interested.
Yeah. You're not a wild.
We'll definitely put it all out there when we're ready to go. And I'm really hopeful by the end of the year.
Also, we have a copy of the book here, so if there's anybody interested in taking a look at that this weekend, you know, we're happy to. We only have the one copy, so we have to take it home with us. But anybody who's interested in taking a look and just sort of seeing how we do things, you're welcome to.
We'll be pleased to send the information out to everybody that registered for this one. It's available. Ramona?
Yeah. I just want to say congratulations. I was at where you are. When I was teaching Braille, I thought we can do this better, and I did, but you've gone way beyond where I went 30 years ago. And I want to say that, whether you use the word Braille-itude or some other thing, I think that we're getting kids in the public school system that have tons of disincentives for learning Braille that we probably should talk about before the end of the conference, and you're finding ways to combat that in the center. The center is a great atmosphere for doing that, and so I guess I'm just eager that we project ways also to do this in the public school system, because that's a tough setting, but to the extent we can start younger, better.
I think you're absolutely right, and I like how you said incentivize the Braille learning. And I think one of the ways that you can really do that is the incorporation of that technology, because kids love technology. It's the new trendy hip thing. It's like sliced bread was a couple years ago. And one of the ways that you can really do that, one of my favorite sort of new quaint ways, is the smaller Braille displays that can interface via Bluetooth. And so one of the first people I talked to about that was actually Jennifer Dunham, who takes her Braille display, connects it to her iPhone, leaves her iPhone in her backpack, and then reads off her Braille display while she is on the bus or doing other sorts of things.
And kids can do that sort of thing. If they have access to a Braille display and they can read the things they want to read on the device they want to read it on, then not only are you teaching technology, but you're teaching Braille at the same time.
And they can text with them.
Absolutely. Natalie?
I was just going to say, I think a lot of what Emily and Ryan have presented here is very transferable to the K-12 setting. I mean, incorporating students' interests into learning, I mean, that's totally, I'm sure, you know, all of us who are passionate about what we do are doing that. And continue to do that, and our own personal attitudes too, I think, are important. You know, if we believe that Braille is important, and we have a good Braille attitude, then our students will as well. So I think most of what Ryan and Emily have presented here is pretty transferable. We maybe have some barriers in the public education as teachers, maybe that Ryan and Emily don't have because they're working in a place that believes the same thing that they do, but and it's all a public education. It's what we do every day, right? PR for our kids and for Braille. So.
Yeah, I wondered, sorry guys, if you wanted to respond to that. Do you want to respond to that?
No, I think it's pretty fair.
So yeah, it brings to mind, I did wonder during the presentation, if there is anybody who's teaching in the schools with kids that does anything like this, giving kids a product that they can take home that's audio-based to reinforce the learning. I mean, I think about all of the stuff that my own little kids have that are both print or printed Braille and audio. And that reinforcement, I'm just wondering if there is actually anything out there that's a similarly based product for kids just to reinforce those concepts.
Many, 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 many years ago with cassettes and language experience, I remember a preschooler, and we went on a walk in the fall and chomped around in the leaves and picked things up, and he narrated into a cassette player what we were doing. And then we went back and I put it into Braille. And, you know, even though he couldn't read everything, he could follow along. And he continued to have that cassette into college in his professional life.
That's great.
It was that meaningful to him. And again, it felt it was an earlier level of technology, but it did incorporate the language experience of technology.
Okay, Holbrook?
I want to respond to that real quick, Ms. Holbrook. I think that the incorporation of audio in Braille, I wish this is something that we had thought of years ago, because it is incredibly helpful. When you give somebody, they say, I want to read a book, and so you give them the book, and the book is huge. And maybe they just finished learning Braille a little bit ago, and it's daunting. And so often what we hear is, I got started and then I got lost and then I just quit and gave up. And because it is, it's you're going from reading a couple lines at a time to the volumes we bind are about 120 pages. And so it's a huge transition. And so sometimes what we'll do is using all the stuff that's out there now, you can use the recording function on the iDevices, the voice memos app, or again, we cannot stress enough, and this is we're not paid for this, but the Book Wizard producer from American Printing House, giving you the ability to make DAISY audio files, because then you can take that and you can put that onto even if they don't have an iDevice or even if they don't have a stream or a book sense or what have you, it's not terribly difficult to get a player from the library. So you get a player from the library and you can put that on there for people to be able to read. And so maybe when people get that book and they're daunted by the first couple of pages, I'll say, all right, I'm going to record the first couple of pages for you and do it at a nice slow pace so that they can follow along with that. Take it home, know what they're supposed to be reading, feel what they're supposed to be reading, and then be able to have that extra bit of help. So audio and recordings we're finding are just huge.
And it's just kind of starting to come up too that, you know, because we emboss so much materials off of Bookshare and other wonderful internet-based resources and articles that we'll clip off of websites and whatnot, that students a lot of times are, and particularly more computer literate ones, will also be able to get those through speech through their computer and whatnot. And so, to a certain extent, I've had some students come to me rather sheepishly saying, oh, well, I went on it. I'm like, you know, no, but, you know, read the Braille. I'm not going to say don't use the audio. I don't want to create, and that's one of the big things that we've had to, you know, kind of come to terms with is having a not, you know what, audio and Braille aren't enemies. computers and Braille aren't enemies. We need that they're friends and they work together. And Braille is awesome. And if audio helps you learn Braille and will give you that much more functionality, then that's what you got to do. But you know, as long as you are not cheating yourself, you know that that's you know.
Well, okay, you had a question.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to say two things. First, I love what you just said about audio and Braille are not enemies. And it just relates to the big picture of literacy that we have to look at. All of the tools that we put in a child's toolbox or an adult's toolbox. But the second thing I want to point out is it's very different to teach a child to read through Braille than to teach Braille to a person who already knows how to read. And so I think we have to keep those two things pretty clear in our minds in terms of how we're going to provide support. I'm not sure that we can take something that's being used with adults and superimpose it on kindergartners and first graders and second graders because they don't know how to read. And so your program sounds fantastic, but essentially for people who already know how to read, who are learning Braille, which is, you know, really, really critical. And some of the most unmotivated people sometimes are those people. So, good for you.
Yeah, I would be interested, I would love to be able to work with the, you know, with some educators on this to see if there's ways, and I do agree it was a completely, you know, different process. But I'd love to see if there's ways that, you know, I'd like to be able to do a children's version of this book at some point. But not having, you know, worked with kids, I'm not feeling, you know, I can change the vocabulary, but I need to know the other parts of it too. So if anybody's, you know, interested in collaborating on that or on something like that, I'd be really interested to talk to them.
I had normally another question, if you can hear me.
Yes, sir.
These displays are pretty expensive as a general rule. What happens if the person leaves the program?
Usually they're using the display in class. Unfortunately, we're not able to loan them out outside of class, obviously because they are so expensive. But we do have Perkins Braillers on loan for people to use in the apartments and things like that. And, we also have lab hours where people can come in and work on them, you know, inside the classroom and that kind of stuff. But
I just was wondering about it because you get used to it and then you've gone through the program and can't access it.
Exactly. And then we start pushing right away on counselors, rehab counselors, saying, look, this person is doing really well with this device. This is how it will benefit them in work in college. This is really why they need this. And we just start beating that drum immediately.
Are there provisions so that seniors that are doing well with the display can also, you have to be on the counselors for them too, or not?
I haven't worked with seniors for a number of several years, so I'm not really sure on that
one. The reason why I ask the question is I'm a senior, but I'm not in the rehab process because I just, you know, in Maryland we have a uniquely dysfunctional situation.
Well, I think it's important too to underscore what Emily said about those people who really need them. We don't recommend a Braille display for everyone who leaves the program because not everybody's going to need one. And that's why we make sure that we double emphasize both the Braille display and the paper. For those people who are going into an academic pursuit or for those people who are going to be doing something that could be real Braille intensive, for example, we just had a guy graduate who is an attorney. And so he's absolutely going to be able to want something like that in Braille. So those people who need displays, absolutely. But for those people who don't, or for those people who don't want them, that's why we make sure we have the paper too.
Ryan?
Yes?
One thing that I found over the years that really has helped in, you know, being to incentivize somebody to read Braille is to have a ready-made library there with full of books of all different subjects so that they can be surrounded by them and gets them motivated for them to want to be able to finish the book, to be able to read a book, and they'll go over and, mm-hmm. I want to read this book when I finish. So they'll start talking about the books they want to read. And then also just browsing and desultory reading, but to just go through the library and they find a book that looks interesting, they pull it out of the shelf, and they reset on it at the table and read a little bit, and they put it back in the shelf, and just sort of going around. And to me, it's a real motivator. So there is a, I'm all for technology. I think it's a wonderful thing, and it really has helped Braille literacy. But I think there's a certain amount of value in having steady made Braille around people all the time. Everywhere they turn, there's a Braille book. You know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Our building is actually quite covered in Braille books, almost, almost problematically so. But the thing that we found is, you know, we have, they're coming into class and they are surrounded by Braille books. But, you know, the first day when we first start talking about, I mean, what are you going to want to read when you finish? And we have students talking to they're talking to other students about what they're reading. So it's, they don't just have to read whatever set of books we happen to have there. They get to read anything they want to read. And if they don't want to read a whole book, I will excerpt articles, I will excerpt chapters, I will do, you know, a good bit of librarian work, because it, to me, it's really, really important that you read what you want to read and what is going to be useful. And particularly, I've had so many students where they've, you know, I've been able to find things for them that are related to their profession and their goals, and that motivates them and propels them through careers class and things like that.
And that's the awesome thing about having access to a Bookshare account, is in your Bookshare settings, you can actually specify, I want this for 42-cell wide, 25-line embossable Braille. And so they'll put all the page numbers and markings in there and everything for you. Also having access to Web Braille with the NLS, the BARD service. And so it's really cool. You're absolutely right. Having that library, having those things that we can work with is helpful. And so, and there are certainly some trendy things in there that people want to read. Every summer we get a glut of students who want to read Twilight and Harry Potter. And we forgive them for the first one. But we have that there, so when people want to read New Moon, they can read New Moon. But at the same time, if somebody comes in and says, you know, I want to read The Best and the Brightest, History of the Civil War with Abraham Lincoln and you know, going all the way up to John Kennedy, I've never heard of this book before. But hey, it's on Bookshare, and it's in publisher quality. Let's make that for them, and we'll make a volume at a time. And as soon, you know, as they catch up, then we'll make a new one. And if they graduate not having finished it, then we have a partial book that the next person can come in. And if they pick it up and they get far enough, then they just keep going. And so technology has made it easier than ever to really grow and expand that library. Instead of having to get books from a variety of pre-made sources, we just make our own books.
Let me see if there are other comments that people have about how technology is being used to leverage and enhance Braille instruction, either for children or adults. Shoot, didn't know it'd be a showstopper.
Okay.
Who is this?
Barbara from New Jersey.
Yeah.
I don't want to be sexist about this, but I think little boys are more interested than little girls in operating, say, a recording device. And I found that to be a motivator and a reward. If they want to record something and then Braille it, or say, I did great after they read something, and they get to push the buttons, and they're very eager to get their hands on. And also,
is that sexist? No.
Okay.
Obviously, you didn't have me as a student.
Anybody else with a thought?
Yes, I'm Rose Fernandez.
Yeah.
My question is more about the research behind the book.
Sure.
I'm wondering what kind of sites you're considering for collecting data. What sites are you considering for collecting data to support?
We're implementing the system right now, so we'd be collecting our own data. But I honestly need to find some, you know, in terms of when we can sell the book and the book gets used more widely, then I need to find a smart person like Dr. Bell over there to take that over or show me how to do it or something, because I didn't take statistics.
Any other thoughts about integrating technology?
This is Jennifer Spears.
Yeah.
I teach at the center in Colorado, and I was wondering if integrating has decreased the amount of maybe debate you've had to have with students. Like, there's always going to be a couple that come in there and say, well, I think tech is better, or I think, you know, the Braille is better than the slate. since you had them mingling together, has that sort of trickled down?
Oh yeah, a lot. We have, and we're fortunate to have a really nice office set up too, where Ryan's office is on one end, and there we have a collective middle room that we share. We like to call Middle Earth, and then my office is on the other side.
Oh no, she does.
You came up with it, don't blame me for that. Okay. And so it's obviously a kind of a raucous environment. We're just also positive about everything, and so it's not either or kind of thing. They get to do both. We're not fighting about it.
And the other thing is that as Emily mentioned way back at the beginning about Braille being more of a Swiss Army knife, you know, there are going to be people who leave our program and use more technology than they use Braille. But we structure the program in such a way by making them do these Braille projects to find ways that they're still going to be able to, you know, if you want to use your technology, great, but here are all the ways in which you're also going to be able to use Braille. And I remember in one of my earlier jobs that I was sort of arguing back and forth from time to time with the technology instructor, because the technology instructor was part of the, you know, we talk about, what is it, 90%, Dr. Riles has better statistics than I do, but 90% of people who are Braille readers, 90% of the employee blind are Braille readers, somewhere around that number. And he was always very fond of saying, well, I'm part of the 10% that doesn't need Braille. And so we would get these, yeah, and so they'd go to technology class and they'd say, well, so-and-so said that I don't need Braille. And I don't have to have that fight with anybody anymore. It's fabulous.
Sharon Deegan?
Yes, Sharon.
I was wondering, you said your classes are 15 minutes and 15 minutes. Our classes are 45 minutes. Do you think that's enough time for computer and Braille?
Oh, and we actually, instead of doing the 45 and 45, we just make it a 90, or in our case, 100-minute period. Uh-huh. And so Braille and computers, or some ratio thereto, is covered in that 100 minutes. So maybe some days we'll do 100 minutes of straight Braille, some days we'll do 100 minutes of straight computer, and some days we'll split it 50-50 or 60-40 or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right, this is Jake. Have you found it hard, or was it difficult in the beginning to balance out the Braille / tech time so that one didn't get cheated for the other, or vice versa?
You know what, for some people it really was, because you have people who come into technology especially at varying levels, and so maybe they don't know how to type when they first come in. And so having just learned to type, logging into the network with their username and password can take something like 40 minutes. And so it's difficult in some respects to, with some of those students, to get them the sort of pairing that you'd like them to have. But the alternative to that was that they would go to technology class, they would spend 40 minutes logging in, and then 5 minutes later have to log back out. And so often what we'll do when we have a student like that who is more balanced toward technology is just have some days where we go back and say, okay, today we're just going to do Braille. We did 90 minutes of technology yesterday and 10 minutes of encouragement. Tomorrow we're going to do 100 minutes of Braille and make sure that we can put that pairing back where we'd like it to be.
I guess you should have the
logic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and honestly, the process of monitoring that did make me a better instructor, too, because I really got to, you have to focus in, okay, this is the student, this is what they're doing with this, this is what they're doing with this, and it made me really be a lot more cognizant of where each student was at and their particular needs and goals. So I got to say, it was harder work when we made the transition back in 2010. I noticed my workload seemed much higher than what it had before, but I saw my results improving as well, so I was happy about that. And another thing is, too, you can sneak Braille, not sneak Braille, I don't want to say it like that, but
that's a good way to say it.
For example, I had a certain student who needed to graduate by a certain date and had very particular goals that, you know, and so with the computer, And so, but every single day, you know, if the was getting more lopsided towards computer, perhaps, but every single day, she started class by reading a tip of the day, a particular keystroke. And we just got into a habit of doing that, and that was one absolutely guaranteed to, because you know how important it is for folks to touch Braille every day when they're in that learning process. So there's, you know, 1,000 different little ways that even if it's a computer day or a computer period of time, they are using Braille as well. We have all of our, I don't suppose cheat sheets is actually a good word, but that's what I call them, of all the different commands for the Mac and for Windows and all that in Braille and in, you know, 8.5 by 11 Braille so that they can be taking them home and studying them on the bus and everywhere they go.
And that ends up being a really useful thing just in general. I recently graduated my lawyer student who had 1,000 different pieces of technology he wanted to learn. And he learned both Windows and the Mac and the Braille Sense and all these different kinds of things and various programs on each. And he said, I have all this technology to cover. And so what we made his final project, his big project, was write down all of the keystrokes for all these various things that you have. And so he has now this giant tab-separated book that's almost an inch thick, but now he can just flip to, okay, here's my Apple section, and here's my number section within Apple, and here are all the commands I need to learn.
Yep, just a few more minutes for this session. Is there anybody that hasn't yet made a comment or has a question on the subject of technology?
Sheila, do I get another question for another presentation?
Absolutely.
You're working basically with adults, teaching adults how to transition their Braille skills into technology to open up the cyberspace world for them. But I'm sitting here thinking about what I perceive to be a lack in some of my university programs, and I'm sure I'm not the only one with this, where we're graduating teachers who are proficient in Braille and in teaching Braille, but because the universities don't have this plethora of technology tools, too many of my future teachers are going out into the world with none of these technology skills of how to interface, for example, the Bluetooth with refreshable Braille displays and things like that. We've called in vendors to come in and do presentations to our classes, but that's not enough. How can you envision getting this type of training to the people who are graduating from teacher training programs so they can go out and teach it to the kids?
Oh my gosh, I'd love to develop a program where we could just, you know, bring them in and teach them how to use this technology and how to use it to teach. How to teach the kids to use the technology, but also all the amazing advantages you have in as teaching tools with this stuff.
Well, I would love to do it too. How do we do it?
I think you should set up a summer program for our teachers in training.
This is a great item to follow up on. Now I heard, and I think this will probably be the last, was it Jody?
Joni,
I'm sorry.
I'm from New Mexico and I work at the Orientation Center for the Blind. One thing I've noticed in pairing Braille training with technology is we have a few students with diabetes and they have neuropathy. And because of the neuropathy, the Braille has not come easy to them at all. And of course it's not because they don't know it or they don't understand it, they can't feel it. And what we found is that using the Braille note takers, like Apex and Braille Sense, they've been able to be more successful because the refreshable Braille display is easier to feel to them. And so I was wondering, have you noticed your program anything in that respect?
Exactly, yeah. We've had several students like that. And the Braille display is generally, also you can adjust the tension of the dots, too. You really make it just a lot more successful, particularly with people with neuropathy, yeah.
Yeah, because there's always this perception when people come in with neuropathy that, oh, Braille's going to be extra hard for me because I don't have any feeling. And so putting them on a Braille display and giving them that kind of access is extremely helpful. The other one, if you're wanting a little more manual medium, is again with the APH, they have a substance called PermaBraille, which is these great plastic sheets that come in a variety of sizes, and you can use them to create labels all the way up. They have from 5 or 3 by 5 cards all the way up to 8.5 by 11 sheets, and you can use them to create Braille for a number of things. And those are absolutely fantastic for people with neuropathy for reading Braille.
Okay, well, Emily and Ryan, really appreciate your presentation and bringing the Braille to us. We'll obviously be around to talk with you. We do have a break scheduled now, and there is coffee and things offered across the hall. There may be cookies. And we'll be back in here in 15 minutes. Just a reminder to folks, encourage you to get some coffee, but try not to bring it back in here if you can. There are restrooms around the corner if anybody needs that. We'll see you at 10:15.
Yes, he left.
Yeah.